Picture a small room at the University of Illinois. It's 1954, there's a flight simulator, primitive by our standards, and there are 20 volunteers. Every one of them is a licensed pilot, not one of them holds an instrument rating. The researchers give them a simple task: fly the simulator into a cloud, fly on the instruments alone, and then just try to keep the airplane upright. On average, those 20 pilots kept control for 178 seconds, 2 minutes and 58 seconds, then the airplane departed, every time. 20 out of 20, I'm Pattern. And this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today, I want to talk about that number and about the thing that study actually measured, because most people hear 178 seconds and they think it's a story about spatial disorientation. It's not. Not really. It's a story about decision making. It's about the 20 or 30 small choices you make on the ground and in the air that put you at the edge of that cloud in the first place. Let's walk through this together. Before we go further, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, and the milestones in this business are hard won. aviationsoul.com. Okay, back to 1954. The study was run by three researchers, and the results got boiled down over the years into a famous little safety article called 178 Seconds to Live. And I'll be honest with you, the number itself has been argued about for 70 years. The simulator was crude. The pilots knew they were being tested. Real airplanes and real weather don't hand you a clean average. So don't get hung up on the exact figure. The point was never the stopwatch. The point is the shape of what happened. A visual pilot loses the horizon, and without training, the body starts lying to the brain almost immediately. The inner ear tells you your level when you're banking. You correct a turn you're not in, you pull. The airplane tightens into a spiral. The airspeed builds, and by the time the instruments are screaming at you, your own senses are screaming something completely different. That fight between what you feel and what you see is one almost nobody wins untrained. Here's the part I really want you to sit with. Every single one of those pilots ended up in that fight because of a decision. In the study, it was the researcher's decision. In real life out here, where it actually kills people, it's yours. Let me tell you what the accident record looks like, because the Air Safety Institute has been tracking this exact category for decades. Visual pilot continues flight into instrument conditions. It is one of the deadliest things in all of general aviation. Not the most common accident. But when it happens, the fatality rate is brutal, up around 80% in a lot of the data. A fender bender on a taxiway, you walk away from this. One you usually don't. And when the investigators go back and reconstruct these flights, they almost never find a single bad moment. They find a chain. A long, quiet chain of little decisions, each one reasonable on its own. So let's build that chain together, the way it actually happens, and then let's talk about where you break it. It starts the night before. You've got somewhere to be, a family thing, a business meeting, a friend flying in you promised to pick up. That's decision zero, and it's the heaviest one on the whole flight. And you make it before you ever touch the airplane. You've given yourself a reason to go. Morning comes. You pull the weather. The forecast is, let's call it honest. Marginal VFR. Ceilings around 1500, maybe dropping visibility. Okay, now lowering later. There's an Airmet Sierra out for mountain obscuration along your route. And here's the first real decision point. You read that briefing and your brain does something very human. It goes looking for the version of the story where you get to go. Ceilings are 1500. That's legal. It's supposed to improve by afternoon. I'll just take a look. I'll just take a look is the single most dangerous sentence in this entire chain. Write that down, because here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. I'll take a look feels like you're keeping your options open. It feels like the safe, flexible choice. It is actually the opposite. It's you deciding to make the go or no-go call later in the air, alone, when you're tired and task-saturated and emotionally committed instead of now on the ground with a cup of coffee and a clear head. You are trading your best decision-making conditions for your worst on purpose. The FAA gives us a framework for this, and I like it because it's simple enough to actually run in the cockpit. It's called the 3P model. Perceive, process, perform. You perceive the hazard, the weather that's lowering. You process it against your own situation and your own limits, and then you perform, you make the choice, and you act on it. The trap in our chain is that people perceive just fine. Everybody sees the clouds, where it breaks down is the processing, because get there, EDIS quietly rewrites your limits in real time. So let's keep flying the chain. You launch, it's decent for the first 20 minutes, then the ground starts getting hazy. The horizon goes soft, you descend a little to stay under the layer, because the ceiling's coming down to meet the terrain. Now you're lower than you planned, the visibility's dropping, and you notice you're following a road because the landmarks aren't as obvious as they were. Each of those is a decision. Descend, press on. Follow the road. None of them felt like the decision. They felt like little adjustments. That's the thing about this chain. There's never a moment with a flashing sign that says, this is it. This is the fatal choice. It's death by 100 small, reasonable corrections. By the time you hit real instrument conditions, you've already said yes 15 times. Turning around now feels like admitting all 15 of those yeses were wrong. And that right there, that's the psychology that flies good people into the ground. Continuation bias. The longer you've committed to a course of action, the harder it is to abandon it, exactly when abandoning it matters most. So now let's talk about breaking the chain, because I don't want to just scare you. I want you to be better on your next flight. Let's get practical. First, set your personal minimums on the ground in writing and set them higher than the regulations. The regs are a floor, not a plan. Class E out here says 3 miles visibility, 500 below, 1,000 above, 2,000 horizontal from clouds. That's legal. That is not the same as smart, and it's a country mile from comfortable for a low-time visual pilot. So decide your own numbers when you're calm. Maybe it's ceilings no lower than 3,000 and visibility no less than 6 or 8 miles for now, and you raise or lower that as you gain experience. The number matters less than the fact that you set it before you had a reason to cheat it. Second, make the go or no-go a real decision with a real deadline, and give yourself an out that doesn't cost you anything. I'll fly toward it, and if the ceiling hits my minimum before I reach the ridge, I turn around and land at the airport I already picked. Notice what that does. You've moved the decision back onto the ground into the plan. You've named the trigger, and you've pre-forgiven yourself for turning around, because turning around was always one of the acceptable outcomes, not a failure. Third, and this is the one that saves lives, practice the 180, the precautionary turn. When the visibility starts closing in, the move is a standard rate, 180 back the way you came, because the air you just flew through was flyable. You have proof. You were just there. Do it early. Do it while you still have a horizon. And do it before you need it. The pilots who die in this scenario almost always waited until they were already in the soup to try to turn, and now they're doing their first real instrument maneuver, a climbing or descending turn, in cloud, disoriented, with the clock from that Illinois study already running. And that's the fourth point, the hard one. If you do blunder in, if the world goes white and your options are gone, here is what buys you back some of those 178 seconds. Level the wings first, using the attitude indicator, not your body. Your body is lying to you now. Wings level, power set, small, gentle pressures, then a slow standard rate, turn back toward where it was clear and hold it and trust the instruments over everything your inner ear is shouting and say it out loud on the radio. Declare. Teleproach, you're a visual pilot in instrument conditions and you need help. Controllers do this exact save more often than you'd think, and not one of them has ever thought less of the pilot who asked. The airplane doesn't care about your pride, and neither do they. They just want you down. The Airman Certification Standards on the Private Pilot Check Ride has a whole task on this, on recovery from unusual attitudes by reference to instruments, and a whole area on risk management and weather decision making. And when the examiner runs you through it, they're not testing whether you can fly a partial panel, like an instrument pilot. You can't yet, and they know it. The examiner is looking for something more basic and more important. They want to see that you understand the 178 seconds is a last resort, a survival skill, and that your real skill, the one that keeps you alive, lives way back at the start of the chain, on the ground, in the briefing, in the honest conversation you have with yourself about whether today is the day. Because here's the truth. Those 20 pilots in Illinois told us 70 years ago, and it's still true. Once you're in the cloud without the training, the airplane is mostly out of your hands. The place you actually control the outcome is everywhere before that. The forecast you took seriously. The minimum you didn't fudge. The turn you made while you still could. Learning to fly is hard and it's expensive. And weather decision making is the part nobody can hand you on a checklist. It comes from flying and from being honest, and sometimes from turning around and eating the cost of a hotel and a rental car and feeling a little silly the next morning when it burns off clear and blue. Feeling silly is a wonderful outcome. It means you're here to feel it. The story of that study, and the accident data behind it, comes from the University of Illinois research and the ongoing work of the OPA Air Safety Institute and the decision-making tools I walk through live in the FAA's Risk Management Handbook, which is free and worth an evening of your time. There's more where this came from over at radiohangar.com. So, on your next flight, when you catch yourself saying, "I'll just take a look," stop, that's the cloud, talking to you early. Make the call on the ground, keep a door open behind you, and turn around while turning around is still easy. I'll see you in the pattern.